Coming up next on This Week in Radio Tech, we've got Henry Goodman. He's with CalREC. What an interesting history they have. And more than history, what they're building for now and for the future. A lot of networked audio consoles, and from TV trucks to new radio consoles. It's all coming up. Chris Tobin joins us, too, on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support. Online at bgs.cc. By the Ruby console from Lavo. See Lavo and your future at lavo.com/twrt. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. And by the CalREC Type R console system. Type R is a brand new, modular, expandable IP-based radio system from CalREC Audio. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. And oh, we got a great show today because one of our sponsors is going to be talking about their technology. And there's so much I didn't know about this company and about this fellow who's our guest. We'll get to introducing him in just a minute. I'm Kirk Harnack. I am in the Telos Alliance studio back here in Nashville, Tennessee, after a very active 9 days in Las Vegas at the NAB show. Chris Tobin hooked up with me there, and we've got a lot of interviews done. We aired those earlier this week. We had a kind of a special edition of This Week in Radio Tech. You may want to go back and visit that for yourself. So anyway, we're going to talk today about audio console technology and how things have changed, and maybe a few things have remained the same. So anyway, I'm back in Nashville. Chris Tobin is with us. Chris, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm in the audio interrogation booth. I'm doing very well. And yes, 9 days in Vegas, it was a lot. It's a very bland booth. I know. It's not much going on here.
No, I was just saying, for those who have just joined us before the show, I made the comment of, oh, look, it looks like an interrogation closet there that Chris is in. It's a tight little studio you're in right there. Yeah.
Yes, they hold me close, and they put headphones to my face and threaten me and say, okay, talk. What do you got going on here? The headphones don't work, then there's the stapler. And that's it. That's when things get really nasty.
Oh, they really intimidate you with the stapler.
There you go. I'd be really intimidated with a red stapler, though. With a red stapler, that's different. Okay. But, Vegas was great. Yeah, see, NAB was great. Public radio conference was great. Everything, it was a good time. Mm-hmm. 9 days.
And you got to go to the PREC. I did not, although we both got to attend the dinner, the awards dinner for PREC, where Jeff Welton was held hostage. I mean, awarded some award. What was he awarded? Engineer of the Year?
Yeah, I think it was Engineer of the Year Life Achievement Award, too. Something like that. Mm. There were several Jeff Weltons. I'm not sure which one we were actually talking to. At one point, there was
six of them
walking around with shirts with a name. Hello, my name is Jeff Welton. I don't understand this.
I should have brought the t-shirt.
Work at the house, and are you still married? It was like, it was crazy. It was a crazy time. Great food.
Oh, gee.
Great conversation.
It was good food, sure enough. Well,
seriously, Jeff was honored at the award show for the Public Radio Engineering, the APRE, actually. So, yeah.
Now, what's weird about that is Jeff is not a public radio engineer, per se, is he?
No, but he supports the industry through his efforts in engineering prowess and his knowledge of things that have gone on over the years. And yes, he offers sales support and offers quoting and whatnot. But, you know, the thing is, if you have someone like Jeff who can at least talk to you and you say, Jeff, I'm building a transmitter site on top of a mountain at 10,000 feet. I want to get this, that, and the other. He can say right away, whoa, we've got to derate your transmitter. We've got to do a few things here. It's going to be a little extra cost. Now, if this was a person who didn't understand the derating process, you'd be buying a transmitter, finding out when you plug it in and turn on, it's not performing as expected. That becomes a very nasty conversation. So actually, Jeff's contribution to the public radio sector is very important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We've mentioned it before, but sometime we'll have to do a show about transmitter derating, because there are plenty of transmitters in the world that are on mountain transmitter sites way above sea level, and the air is thinner. And that means that you don't get as much of it. Except remember our friend from Roden Schwartz, he would say, well, that doesn't matter to our transmitter, it's water cooled.
That's right. It's liquid cooled. So yeah. What's
liquid cooled. Yeah.
Well, then the operator has trouble breathing, working around your transmitter. How's that?
There you go. Well, hey, I want to bring in our guest, and our guest is Henry Goodman. Henry works with the folks at CalRec. He is a big part of CalRec in terms of product design and management. And so let's bring him in. Henry, it's a little bit late with where you are in the UK, but thank you for staying up late at the office with those extra cups of tea or coffee and joining us. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you, and it's a pleasure. As you can see, it's dark outside here in England, and about 10 o'clock, but I've managed to break open the factory doors and get in here all on my own to be with you today.
You know, if your factory is anything like our factory at Telos, it's probably pretty quiet around there at 10 o'clock at night, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty quiet. There's not much going on, but I'm here. That's the most important thing, Kirk.
That's right. And you've got some show and tell for us. We'll get to that. And we're going to be talking on this episode about not only about technology, audio over IP, and you told me some fascinating things earlier today that CalRec has actually been doing audio over IP for close to 20 years now. So I want to hear about that and then how you came to join the standards that other companies are doing and, you know, kind of what that means for you and your customers and prospective customers. So we'll get to all that. And we're also going to, just hear a little bit about your getting back into the radio business because CalRec is known so well for television consoles. So all that's coming up. Henry, I appreciate you joining us so late. Our show this week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcasters General Stores. Hear from them. We'll be right back with Henry Goodman.
The Aran 655 is the latest addition to the Inovonics family of rebroadcast receivers. Designed specifically for FM broadcast translators, also referred to as relay transmitters. The Aran 655 is unique as an uncompromising DSP-based HD radio and FM receiver combined with a powerful 3-band audio processor and dynamic RDS encoder. IP connectivity adds streaming capabilities, and a web browser interface gives you total remote control of the unit from any PC or mobile device. The Aran 655 gives you maximum flexibility for program sources. Select program audio from analog FM, digital channels HD 1 through 8, streaming sources, and analog or AES digital line inputs, all with assignable failover audio backup. The internal RDS encoder allows you to customize your RDS messaging. You can use incoming off-air RDS data, convert HD radio pad data to RDS, convert streamed metadata to RDS, or receive IP telnet data. Comprehensive audio processing includes gated and windowed AGC, a unique syllabic leveler, 3 bands of compression, and both wideband and independent HF limiting. Easy setup is achieved by using 10 factory presets and 10 customizable presets. The processor also supports day parting, allowing automatic preset changes to follow different programming formats throughout your broadcast day. The front panel has an OLED display and jog wheel with intuitive menus for easy setup, advanced control, and editing for all operating parameters. The Aran 655 dynamic web interface gives you total remote control of the unit, from any PC or mobile device. A comprehensive set of menus includes a quick overview of now playing info, input-output control, processor options, RDS encoder, alarms and notifications, SNMP settings, and much more. You can also listen to the live audio broadcast streamed through the web interface.
That is so cool. The Aran 655, and we got to meet some folks from Inovonics at the NAB show. You can check that out in our last episode, episode 439. This is available from Broadcasters General Store. You can call them. They're really friendly. I would suggest calling them at 352-622-7700 for Broadcasters General Store. You can also see their website at bgs.cc, bgs.cc. Thanks a lot to Inovonics and to Broadcasters General Store for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. All right, back to it. Chris Tobin, Kirk Harnack along with you, and Henry Goodman is here from CalRec. And the first thing I want to apologize for is mispronouncing the name of the company, CalRec. That's not it at all. Henry, tell me what I'm saying wrong.
Well, the name of the company is based, is the proper way of saying it is Colrec. And that's because it's named after the river that flows past the factory here. And that the name of the river is the Calder River. So the correct way of saying it is Colrec. So it's that's where it comes from.
And I think a lot of people do say Calrec, so you probably won't be too upset at me if I mispronounce it, right? Because probably half the world calls it Calrec.
Yeah, you're right. Even myself sometimes.
Yeah. So give us, if you haven't been in a TV production truck in the last couple of decades, then maybe, like me, you haven't in person seen a big Calrec console. We're going to get to talking about the technology in a few minutes, but talk to me a little bit about just bring us, up to date with the history and where are you most likely to find Calrec consoles these days?
Well, these days, most of our business is on the TV side of the business. And we have a lot of customers in the US. In fact, in the large HD truck market in the US, about 70 to 80% of the market all have Calrec consoles in them. So pretty much if you want to see a Calrec console, go and visit an OB truck doing a major sports event in the US and you'll find one.
Wow. All right. But you guys... Am I wrong? You used to do radio consoles and then you found the TV business was just too good to not focus on completely. Isn't that right?
Yeah, the last radio console we did was about 15, 20 years ago. That was quite successful for us in the UK to the BBC because we designed it specifically around the requirements for the BBC. And they installed it through their regional radio stations throughout the UK.
Gotcha. Well, before we get to the Type R consoles and the technology in there, let's chat for a minute. You told me something that I had no idea about, that Calrec has been doing audio over IP for a long, long time already, and that's pretty unusual. My employer, as everybody knows, is the Telus Alliance, and we started doing this about 20 years ago, 1999, and had the first product in about 2003. But talk to me about your history with audio over IP.
A similar time frame, actually. And we had a product, a networking product, which we called Hydra, which connected our large format TV consoles to stage boxes, which were scattered around the studio, scattered around golf courses, wherever. And that technology was an IP-based technology. It was proprietary at the time, and in fact still is proprietary. We still use a very similar technology today in our large format audio consoles. We've updated it slightly. We call it Hydra 2 now, but it uses very similar IP technology.
So how are you doing AES 67? Of course, that was ratified back 2014. And so that's been out not quite 5 years. I think the anniversary of September is in September. It'll be 5 years. So what about Calrec and AES 67?
Calrec is now committed to AES 67, or rather the SMPTE 2110 version of AES 67, which is slightly different, but pretty much almost the same. And the Type R product is our first natively AOIP AES 67 SMPTE 2110 product. So it's our first product which doesn't have our proprietary networking built into it.
So... In just a minute or two, Henry, I'm going to ask you to give us some explanation of the differences in AES67 and SMPTE 2110. I've often thrown them around as being the same or very similar. But first, I want to ask Chris Tobin. Chris, you're in a big city there, and you've been in some trucks here and there and some bigger facilities than I have typically. Have you come across Calrec consoles yourself?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, quite often. Go past the arenas, Madison Square Garden and Lincoln Center a few times, and a couple of the OB trucks, the HD guys, when they come to town. I recognize the Calrex. Yep. And there's the other popular ones as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, it's funny how, you and I, Chris, we talk to engineers all over the place, and it's interesting. Our worldviews, our tech views are different based upon what we happen to come across, right? I mean, Back in the early days of audio over IP, at least for my employer, for Telos, I would describe, you know, how this worked. I'd even demonstrate it. And I would have people in the audience, you know, raise their hand and say, that can't work. That will not work. It absolutely will not work. Because their view of networking was, you know, print screen doesn't work, you know, and send it to the printer and it doesn't work. And oh, my internet's down again and the network's down again. And you know, so that was their view. Right.
I worked in a large broadcast facility part of my career where they were having issues trying to explain to the techies that fiber optics and a light over glass actually does work and actually could be much better run between floors to the studio frames rather than large bundles of cable that weigh many pounds and cable trays that were slightly beginning to bend and come apart from the wall. To this day, matter of fact, I still think there are a few folks that still have an issue with when it comes to fiber and audio and video and replacing it with coax. It's just so, yeah, audio over IP, video over IP. There are a lot of folks who are going to say, yeah, it doesn't work. It's not reliable. I don't trust it. I'll go to SDI. Well, I'm good.
You know, years ago, I'm sure I heard that same phrase. Wait a minute. You're going to tell me I'm going to put my audio on a beam of light.
That's right.
Well, slap my granny. That ain't going to work. Henry, if you could take some time here and educate us. We've heard AES 67 approved almost 5 years ago. And I know my employer and other companies have been adding AES 67 capabilities, either fully compatible or so fully compliant, I should say, or at least compatible in some modes in some way with the AES 67 standard. And now along comes this thing, SMPTE 2110, I believe it's the -30 that describes the audio portion of SMPTE 2110. What should we know about these two things and how are they different? And just, you know, as an engineer, what should I know about this?
Well, they're not very different, to be honest. The 2110-30 has some minor differences between AES 67, one of them being one of the discovery protocols is taken out of the 2110 standard, but it wasn't a protocol that was particularly used widely anyway. So all intents and purposes, from a transport mechanism point of view, AES 67 is the same as 2110-30. Of course, what 2110 as a whole tries to do, it isn't a standard in itself. It's a suite of standards brought together for the broadcast market to try and standardize or recommend standards for streaming audio and video, but not just the transport part of it, the control side of what you need when you're in the real world as well.
Oh, okay. Now, does that imply that SMPTE 2110 includes some protocols like ISO 4 or 05? Is that part of what 2110 is?
Absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yes. So, formerly no ISO 04 and 05, because the AES 67 protocol in itself is just a transport protocol. So that's all about getting audio from point A to point B. Of course, if you've got a stage box somewhere and you want to get audio from that stage box, you need a bit more than just the transport. You need to be able to control the mic gain, for example, switch the phantom power on and off. And for that level of control, AES 67 isn't sufficient in its own. So you need a layer of control over that, which is what ISO 03 and ISO 4 are working towards within the 2110 suite of standards.
All right. Now I understand why I'm a little bit confused about this because of what each part of it actually defines. And so I guess unless you're intimately familiar with all the wording and what things actually define, it's easy to throw the terms around probably a little bit incorrectly. In the end, hopefully it doesn't matter. We're kind of trying to get all on the same page. You told me earlier that 2110-30 was a subset of AES 67, at least in some terms. Isn't that right?
Yes, but as I said, the major differences are really minor differences, which don't really affect us in terms of actually transporting audio. They're mainly to do with the discovery protocols that you need at each end of the link to understand what's being sent down the line.
So when you're talking with your customers, prospects, about either whether it's television consoles or the Type R consoles, and I know we run an ad, we're going to run one here in a few minutes for the Type R, where you say that it's SMPTE 2110, and that implies that it has AES67 elements in it. What's the important thing? What are your customers asking you, and what's important that they know about this, especially if it's their first time they're getting audio over IP in their facility?
Well, a lot of people, like you mentioned, AES67 a lot. In my head, AES67 is a standard which is already defined. It's already agreed. The broadcasting world has already decided AES67 is what we're going to use for transport of audio in a multi-connected environment, if you like. So that's done. That's sort of everybody's agreed on that. The challenge with streaming, though, isn't just about the transport. It's about defining your streams when you want to decide you want to send audio or video from point A to point B. You have to define the stream. So you have to define how it's encoded, what the sample rate is, what the bit word length is, various audio constraints that you want to define, IP addressing, that sort of thing. And that needs to be understood by both ends of the link so that the link that wants to receive that can decode the signal. And the most important part about SMPTE 2110 that Calrec is working on at the moment is that discovery mechanism. And 2110 provides a way of making a server, if you like, which stores that information through these protocols like ISO3 and ISO4, which means that you have a server on the network which stores that information. So when you get a new device coming onto the network, it interrogates the server, can find out information about what all the other sources and streams are available on the network, and decide whether it wants to use them or not.
Ah, okay. That's interesting. That's very sensible. It's a little bit different than what I grew up with over the past 15 years or so with live wire networking, where presence is transmitted as a broadcast, or maybe it's as a multicast. But anyway, it's transmitted, and every device on the network, every 10 seconds or so, just spits out a packet as to, here's who I am, here's where I am, and here's what I've got. And then any device you connect to the network receives that and builds its own table. What you're describing is a system whereby, go ahead.
Sorry, it's very similar. Once a device is connected to that central server, the only real difference between what you're described and actually what we had on our proprietary system is that database is managed in a proprietary way. The advantage of the 2110 NMOS or ISO3 or ISO4 server is that it's a protocol that any device can understand and sign into. And that's the key to a broadcasting environment is the use and ability to put not just one manufacturer's device on the network, but every manufacturer's device on the network.
Gotcha. So that server, the language that it speaks, its protocol, its format is well defined, and anybody can build a system that talks to it. Very cool.
That's right.
Chris, now, I want to hear Chris
thoughts
about
that. That's one of the most important things about the.
Sorry, I have a lot of delay from the UK. I'm so sorry to talk over you. Chris, I want to bring Chris in because you've got a lot of experience with different systems, Chris. Mine is a little bit more limited. This thing that we call discovery seems pretty important. Without it, setting up AOIP, or I suppose video over IP, gets to be pretty tedious, yeah?
Well, yeah, sure. It's the discovery of any system, system devices is key. In an automatic fashion, if you will, or I plug in a device and discovery kicks in and boom, it goes. But you know, we've become so accustomed to the universal plug and play concept of everything we do. Discovery has probably moved up on the list to almost number two after the device itself. So yeah, it's important. I mean, I've worked on many systems in the early days where discovery was somewhat rudimentary, where it did require some intervention from me typing in and adding a few things. And now it's just plug and play. But I think what Henry's talking about in the way with ISO 3 and 4 and having a server and allowing any device to be able to talk to the server, I think makes total sense. And it's a great way to look at it. And it'll be very helpful because I think as we move forward, we're going to see more and more of a hybrid environment of systems talking to each other and platforms. And it's going to be very busy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that I'm going to set up this question for Henry. So in my limited experience, of course, I was introduced first to, I think, LiveWire Discovery Protocol, which is works as I described a couple minutes ago. And then along came a relationship with the folks at Ravenna. Right. And so my employer, we added Ravenna, which uses, I believe, Bonjour to discover new devices on the network, kind of like plugging a printer into your network, right? And then along came AES-67, which, discovery was left up to the vendor, to the manufacturer. There were some obvious choices. And the folks at Audinate with Dante, they went and used SAP. And so a lot of folks are busy adding SAP, that protocol to their system. I know my employer is, I'm sure other people's are too. Hey, the Ravenna guys have had a SAP to Rev program, which is free, that helped translate, you know, before, because Dante being, the 800-pound gorilla in the room, with lots of devices out there, it's important to be able to discover them and talk to them more easily. I have connected to those Dante devices without the benefit of SAP. And there's some typing involved, and you got to get all the semicolons in the right place, otherwise it doesn't work. So yeah, it seems important to be able to click and get what you want very easily and quickly. So Henry, what can you add to this conversation then about NMOS or other discovery protocols? How important is that to you? What are you guys using at CalRec?
Well, we're using NMOS, the ISO 4, ISO 5, and that's exactly what we're committed to do. With the Type R product, we have the equivalent to the Dante controller, which is a stream manager that we call Connect, which is exactly that. It's a central server which stores all the SDP information.
Ah, okay. Okay. So the benefit of a central server, it's easy to, control. It's there. The devices can know where it is. What if that central server dies? What happens? I guess streams that are connected, keep on talking, don't they?
That's right. The streams will keep on. Yeah, okay. They will continue. There's no real challenge with that. In fact, we fully expect that we will have multiple stream managing devices on a network. It's quite possible that you could have more than one server running on a network to protect yourself against one server going down. It's also quite possible that you might have, in the TV world, for example, you might have a stream manager which deals with the audio side of the business of your network and another one that deals with the video side. It doesn't preclude having more than one of these servers on the network.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. Well, this is opening my eyes a bit. I'm glad to be finding this out. Hey, we're about the halfway point. You're watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech. It's our 440th episode, and we're talking to Henry Goodman. Chris Tobin's here. I'm here, and we're talking to Henry Goodman with CalRec or CallRec. And coming up in the next little bit, we're going to be looking at some of the design philosophy. How are the CalRec Type R consoles designed? I want to ask Henry about some of the manufacturing process. I think that's fascinating, and how they choose components and how they lay it, what they think is important for their customers to be looking at when they select a Type R. We're talking about that all coming up, and hopefully Henry might have a war story for us as well. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you in part by CalRec and by Angry Audio. We'll be right back.
Calrex Type R is a modular, expandable IP-based radio system featuring three slimline panels, a fader panel, a large soft panel, and a small soft panel easily configured to give the operator full control. Layouts are saved and recalled quickly between shows. A single 2RU core with integrated I.O. gets customers up and running fast, and that single core can power up to three independent mixing environments with no sharing of DSP resources. Available in four DSP packs, and as your station grows, larger packs can be added, enabling it to grow with you. Power to the surface is supplied via standard PoE switches, keeping cabling to a minimum. Type R is fully AES-67 compatible, as defined by SMPTE 2110, which means that it is also compliant with NMOS discovery and connection management specs. All these features combined make Type R the most flexible radio console you can buy. Find out more at calrec.com/twert.
And if you would add that slash twert at the end, it'll let the folks at Calrec know that you heard about it right here. Hey, studio guests are only human, you know, and humans, well, they do things like they cough, they sniff, and clear their throats, even on the air. You can cure this with the Angry Audio Guest Gizmo. Press the cough button and mute the mic. Every guest needs one. You know what else guests need? Well, they need headphones, which is why each guest gizmo also has a studio-quality headphone amp with individual volume control. Anything else? You've seen those mic arms with the built-in LED tallies? Well, they're beautiful. But how do you get them to light up? Well, the Guest Gizmo does that too, really easily, turning on the red light whenever the mic is hot. And installing the Guest Gizmo in your studio furniture couldn't be easier. All you need is a 2¾-inch hole saw and a steady hand. No router required. Your studio gets a clean, custom appearance, and you get the credit. Check out the latest Guest Gizmo and all the other cool gadgets at angryaudio.com. That's an easy website to remember, angryaudio.com. Oh, they got a lot of cool gadgets there. They displayed some of them at the NAB show. We'll have another one to talk about in a little while. This Week in Radio Tech, episode 440 with Kirk Harnack, Chris Tobin, and our guest Henry Goodman, staying up late in the UK at the Calrec headquarters there. What's the name of the town that you're in there, Henry?
It's a small town called Hebden Bridge. Which is about halfway between Manchester and Leeds, if you know the UK at all.
And you told me that you're in hill country, yeah?
That's right. We've got what we call hills. They're only small little molehills compared to some of yours, I'm afraid, Kirk. But yes, and the reason we're based here is we're in a very old textile mill. It's the building we manufacture the equipment in is over 200 years old. It's actually a protected building. And when it was first built, it had a water wheel powering the sewing machines and the textile mill that was inside it. When the Industrial Revolution came along and they invented steam engines, we moved away from water. But you never know, we might go back to water soon.
You were telling me earlier that actually where you live was in a way the beginning of an Industrial Revolution. Give me the little elevators talk about that.
Yeah, well, where we are is the central of center of the textile industry in the UK. So cotton and the wool industry was all in this area because of the hills and the power that the water generated for the factories. And as the Industrial Revolution kicked off and things like steam engines were invented, a lot of that industrial base was based in this area. In fact, in Manchester, not far from where we are, it was the world's first passenger railway station, for example.
Wow! That's some history there. And what about the name, the rec part of the Calrec name? Was there a recording studio of some kind?
Absolutely. When the guys who first started Calrec, and they were a bunch of musicians, and like most musicians, they didn't have any money. So they built their own recording studio. So it was called the Calderdale Recording Studio. So over the years, it got shortened to the CAL from Calderdale and the REC from recording. And put those two together, and that's where the name came from.
So we've had a talk about some technology, and we may do a little bit more about that. But let's play show and tell. You've got some pieces and parts there, and I'm always eager to look at designs and see what people think is sensible, what people like to put their hands on, touch, and move, and you know, what makes sense for this business of content creation that that a lot of us are in. So start wherever you like there, Henry, and show us what you got.
Well, when we were first thought about Type R's, the radio product that we're now selling, we spoke to a lot of customers, spoke to a lot of stations, and asked them where the market was going, what they wanted to do, and it became very clear that flexibility was one of the key issues that people were after. So the system we have is very modular. It's based on a small number of very modular panels, both physically. But also in terms of software. So we have physically, we have fader panels, what we call large soft panels, which are very soft, and small soft panels to go with them. And the great thing about these is that not only is it physically modular, but it's modular in a software way as well. So you can, for example, you can today you can buy a DSP engine with a work surface with a single console built into it. But as your station grows and you want a bigger console, or you even want a second console connected to the same core, you can buy a software license and you can modularize, or you can grow your DSP engine and your software with the station.
All right. Now, you know, in the ad and also I think behind you, you've got a large and a small soft panel, right?
Absolutely.
Can you show us those?
I can grab one here. This is the large soft panel. I think you can see it. Okay, I'm getting a bit of reflection on there. But the great thing about these is they are very soft. We have put some physical controls along the bottom, but the actual displays that you can see here are soft, and you can map different controls to these panels. And the whole idea is that the technical people at the station can design the layout and the controls, the buttons, the displays, metering, clocks, these sorts of functionality, and place them onto this surface. So you can design your own surface depending on the type of show you're doing, depending on what the operator wants in front of him, rather than having a whole smorgasbord of stuff that they never use.
I see. Okay. So you define what kind of widget style, what goes on the panel?
Absolutely. This panel is based on a grid, a bit like your mobile phone, like an Apple iPhone, where you've got a grid and you can place widgets onto that. This is based on in a similar way. We have an offline application which allows you to build that grid and place the widgets, because you wouldn't want to do that on air. At least we don't think you would want to do that on air. Once that design is done, then you can then load them onto the panel change either from show to show or day to day. You can change the layout and the functionality that you have on that surface. So you can make it either as complex as you want, or in most radio environments, actually quite simple, very straightforward, so that you're not putting yourself in danger in terms of getting lost in the surface at all.
So if I wanted to allow some show to have access to EQ and compression or other attributes like this, some dynamics, I could do that. But other shows, they might not have access to those things. Yeah,
absolutely. And you can do that down to not just a function, but down to individual button level. So if you wanted a specific button which fired a specific jingle, for example, in one show, but you didn't want that in another show, you could do that, and you could load that different setup for different shows.
I need a temporary setup just for one day of the year, and that would be April 1st. So where everything is in a different place.
Oh, well, you'd love this then. You'd get people into all sorts of trouble.
So the other modules that are next to you there, the ones with the faders and then the screen above them. So is that one module that includes the screen and the faders, or have you just added the panel to a fader module?
No, we've just bolted them together physically. So these panels here, this is another large soft panel. It's exactly the one that I had in my hand a minute ago. It's just physically associated with the fader panel. That's all.
Gotcha. Okay.
So you can build either a very small console just using one single fader panel, or a single LSP, large soft panel, or a small soft panel, or you can make a console which is 48 faders wide with lots of screens and as much visual feedback as you want.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I'm curious about. There's not a right or wrong answer, but are there some widgets that span across panels?
Yes, there are. So meters, for example, span across panels. There aren't any widgets that span across panels.
Ah, okay.
Although we have got an application which runs in a browser, which allows you to control the console, and obviously that spans across panels.
Oh, okay. Okay. So tell me about the software. You said that it runs in a browser, so it's HTML?
Yes, absolutely. It runs in a browser. It's web served from the console core, or the main DSP engine. So all you need is, we recommend Chrome, but all you need is a browser and an IP address. You type in your IP address and you get that control, which gives you full control of all the audio functions. And also on a user login, what you can do is that you can switch off the functions, the screens that you don't want in individual operators to access.
Okay, so I have a question about the console sensibilities that I find in Europe versus in the US, and that is that in the US we traditionally have an on-off button at the bottom of the fader. And I know the folks at my employer Telos were asked to, and then they did build a console that was different, had the on-off button, and it was just an on button, I guess a double push, at the top of the fader. Tell what is that sensibility all about?
History, I guess. In Europe, we tend to have a single button, which is usually a cut-uncut button. And we have those differences even on the TV side. So, for example, in the US, on the TV side, they do have a single button, but it's an on lit and then not lit when it's off, which is the reverse logic that we have in Europe. What we've done on Type R, because all the panels are soft, we've made all the buttons on the fader panel soft as well. So you can define how you want that to work. So you could make it with two buttons as an on-off button in the your traditional way of doing it, or you can have a single button which does that function, or you can flip the logic so that it's a cut-uncut functionality.
I want to ask Chris Tobin in just a second, but I got one more question about the browser look into controlling the console. Does this imply that you can control the console, I guess, from an Android device or perhaps even from an iPad device?
It does imply that, yes. There's no reason why you can't do that. The only challenge with that is that we've designed the screens in such a way to give you to maximize the amount of information on the screens.
Right.
So if you try and put that onto a tablet, which has different resolution, different size screens, you might not see it in the way that we've designed it for Chrome.
Right. I might have to swipe a little bit to get left or right. Yeah.
That's right. But what it does allow you to do is it does allow you to control the console from a long way away. So you could be sat, I could be sat here controlling a console in front of you via an HTML, via the web server.
Wow. Now that sounds cool, either for genuine content creation or, again, 1st of April sort of activities.
Really play it, or even just having a technical support to the on-air operator. So you could a technical operator sat at his desk with a version of with a PC and him looking at the console in support of the on-air operator. If you that would be very easy to do.
Chris, we've been running ads for this console for a while. I'm glad to get a broader explanation. What are your thoughts on this design?
I like the design. I've looked at it a couple of times. I was looking at the NAB floor. What I like, and I totally forgot to ask when I was at the booth. If I have, say, four of the six fader modules, I can just have one LCD, large screen as my source for, say, metering and just know what's going on and just the other faders programmed accordingly, correct?
Yes, absolutely. It's modular in that way. So yeah, you could have you don't have to have one or the other. In fact, I foresee some people actually just using a large soft panel. You know, if you're and not even bothering with faders, if it's not a critical on air application, if they're doing news, for example, they might not necessarily need faders. Physical faders. They could do it on rotaries or do it on the assist web served application.
Oh yeah, no, absolutely. I'm just trying to think of some applications that I've encountered. Question I always ask is, how easy is it to interface, say, a Dante connection? I look on the website. Are they? Maybe I read it wrong, or maybe I didn't. Are there cards that plug into the DSP frame that will allow a Dante connection?
Not into the DSP box itself, but we do have a number of IO boxes that sit on the AES67 network. And one of those is a modular device, a modular box, which you can plug a Dante card into.
Okay. So if I'm envisioning a hybrid studio installation where I have portion of my facility is a traditional broadcast, but the other portion of the facility is a post-production or performance studio recording, live production, live recording, where Dante devices are prevalent and make it much easier to create a multi-track facility, then I could just use this frame, plug in the card, and have sort of like a small bridge between the two facilities to create interoperability between them.
Yeah, and we would describe that as a gateway between the AES67 network and the Dante network.
Excellent. All right. Okay. I could see this. This is quite flexible, and I like the form factor. I like the way that you could break it out, because I could see many places that have small little edit booths where you could have a small fader console if you need to for traditional, or just do a soft panel, but still have a full functionality. I like it. I like it a lot.
Hey, Henry, on that large soft panel that you showed us with the six knobs and six buttons on it, if you didn't need, absolute fader control, could you make a little console with just that?
Absolutely. You can place your faders onto that large soft panel and control it with the rotary encoders below. So, yes, absolutely.
Well, and then you have a small soft panel over that at far arm's reach from you to your right there.
I do. Over
now,
here.
Yeah. Now that is the perfect device for a very narcissistic person. It's got me. It's just got me on it. that's my mind. That's me.
Absolutely. So you've got one rotary and one switch, and you could design. It works in exactly the same way as the large soft panel. So you can. It has a slightly smaller grid, but you can place the same control elements onto it, the same clocks, same controllers. So you could set this up with a couple of meters, a clock for the station time, a cough switch, and just a level control for some in-ear monitors if you want for a guest. Or you could even give it to us in the green room or to a producer, and him have his own monitor system set up on one of these.
I can see it right now. So I'm sure you've met them too. And I know Chris has. Meet the morning prima donna. And that's that panel there is all you give that person. And when the button is off, that is the mic is off, then the knob is the headphone volume. And when you turn the button on, then the knob is the mic volume. So of course, I've often heard, let me hear more me. So can you, obviously work for all that.
Yeah. Here, of course, with this, you could actually give him that control if you wanted to.
Yes. Yes, exactly. Exactly. Yep. Oh my goodness. And hey, I don't know if you have handy there any of the rack mount boxes. You know, in the ad, we show several different ones. If you don't have one handy, that's fine. Maybe you could describe what is their functionality for the different one RU boxes that we see.
I don't have one I can pick up at the moment, but they're one right. U boxes, and they're basically the stage boxes for the system. So we have three types. We have basically an analog input, which is mic line inputs and line level outputs. We have an AES input and output box, and we have what we call a combination box, which is a mixture of analog and digital in and out onto that. And they sit on the AES67 network. So they have AES67 connections on the back and audio connections, which can be either RJ45 connections or D-type connections, which is another big difference between between Europe and America.
And then what about now? There's a 2RU box that's back behind you there. Is that the engine core, if you will?
That's the engine core, and that has the DSP processing in it. It also has some of its own local I/O in there. So you even with the core, you get some I/O built into it. So you've got enough for a small studio so you don't have to expand the system if you don't need to. And it provides the DSP processing for the Surface. But it also provides, as I said before, it's modular. So we can grow that. So not only can it provide the processing for one console, but it can also provide processing for up to three consoles or three mix environments. And you open that functionality up by a software license.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, all right. So inside the 2RU box, you can do the mixing for up to three controlling surfaces.
Absolutely.
Three studios,
yes.
I suppose. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah,
wow.
Exactly.
Brilliant. Wow.
Yeah.
Hey. So to tell you what, we're going to take our last commercial break. And when we come back, we haven't got a whole lot of time left. We're going to have a tip of the week. And hey, Henry, if you've got a funny story or something that we can learn from and take away from, great. I will put you on the spot just as much or as little as you want to be on the spot. Chris always has a tip of the week for us. And I may come up with something. So hang on. We're going to be right back. You're watching or listening to This Week in Radio Tech. It's our 440th episode with Henry Goodman from CalRec. We'll be right back.
There has probably never been a better time in history to buy a new radio mixing console. Today's consoles are more sophisticated than ever, with more features and functions than you can shake a stick at. But have you noticed how complicated they are? There's a sea of knobs and switches and displays and buttons. Some of them look like you might need a pilot's license to do your show. Well, a board doesn't have to be complicated to be powerful. Just look at the new Ruby mixing surface from Lavvo. The first thing you notice is how smooth and streamlined it is. Ruby has lots of cool tech, but what it doesn't have is that confusing ocean of buttons that clutter things up. Now, we all know that there are some console features the jock only uses once in a while. So why dedicate controls to them? Ruby fixes this problem by moving those once-in-a-blue-moon controls to a touch-sensitive, customizable GUI that happily shares screen space with your other studio software, helping you fight control room clutter. Thanks to this design innovation, talent that use Ruby produce smoother shows with less errors. Controls that are used the most fall naturally to hand, while functions that rarely need adjustment are easily controlled with just a couple of clicks in the context-sensitive GUI. And Ruby has cool features you won't find on other boards, like Auto Mix, an intelligent gain writing function that guarantees the perfect mix for multi-mic morning shows and call-in segments. Dual mode snapshots that instantly switch the motorized faders between on-air and production modes. And enough DSP and I/O options to make even your pro sound pals green with envy. And because quality is as important to Lavvo as it is to you, every console is proudly built to fanatically precise standards at Lavvo's own factory in Germany. If you're ready to declutter your control room, do yourself a favor. Check out the new Ruby and the other cool Lavvo radio tech at www.lavvo.com/twert.
And thanks a lot to Lavo for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. We sure appreciate it. And one thing you'll notice, there is no lack of consoles that have a lot of technology under the hood, making it easier for operators to do their job and create content. And Henry, I think that's really what it's all about. Your company and the other, you know, other competing companies are all trying to make make content creation smooth and easy, to where the operators can you know, be assured that what they want to do gets done by simply pushing a button, turning a knob, or moving a fader, and they can rely on it sounding good. And the technologies that companies like CalRec and others have adopted are really making that possible. We really get great production value. So, you know, thank you for that. Let's hit Chris up for a tip of the week. Chris, how are you there in the interrogation room?
I'm doing well. I'm just reviewing my notes and going through some stuff from NAB, and you know, I have Radio World and a few other things going on. But I would suggest more and more, as I walked the floor at NAB last week, I came to realize that all of our facilities are beginning to have everything plugged into utilities, into the mains, and we're not really paying attention at times what's plugged in, what's going on, current and whatnot. So last month, I helped a friend install a couple of IP-controlled PDUs, power distribution units, or power strips, if you like, on some cases. And one of the reasons he was installing it for this low-power television station's transmitter site was because it's an unmanned site, and it had all kinds of monitoring functions from SNMP to email alerts, the whole nine yards. And oddly enough, while I was at NAB, I got an alert on my phone from the unit noticing a current change in one of the devices on the server rack. So I would suggest it's time for us to start thinking again how to monitor stuff more granular. So if you're building out a CalRec studio facility and you've got these two RU units and everything going on and just plugged into a standard, if you will, mains or an outlet, even though maybe an orange outlet that says it's grounded and protected by generator services, maybe it's worth time now looking at IP-controlled power strips in that furniture or in that rack and say, okay, let me keep an eye on things a little more closely. The best thing will be you have no alerts, but at least you know you have some comfort. So when something goes awry, your entire facility doesn't crash because you know you lost power and you didn't know about it in advance, or a current draw because maybe a device is starting to go south. You know, things are going wrong. So I'm going to throw out there IP-controlled PDUs, power strips, or power distribution units.
Yeah. Okay. And I've wondered, you know, if you're going to implement a PDU at a transmitter site, someplace remote, and of course, you're doing this in part because you may want to reboot something. That's one good reason. I guess you would want to power some of this from a UPS, including whatever internet devices you have bringing internet in, whether it's a modem, a fiber receiver or something, you know, an IP radio and the router. Those need to have power all the time for you to be able to control other stuff. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, and being able to turn on and off an outlet in a PDU is handy, because I will tell you that this site that I help, we do have a couple of encoding devices that every so often just lock up. We're not sure why, but we're sure it's the firmware. There was some changes made, and it's very convenient. Just tickle the outlet, power cycle it, and it reboots automatically, and it's been very handy. So there's a few, plenty of reasons to go with it. You don't have to go with the $600 versions. There are plenty of them out there for about $100, and you can get what you need for monitoring and control. So it's handy.
Oh. Can you, I'd love to put a suggested model or two in the show notes. Can you email me something about that before we?
Yes, I can.
Okay.
I mean, if you're a Burk user, Burk has one, the AC8.
Oh.
I have one at my site where it comes in very handy. I was using it for SCA encoders. When we weren't renting, I just turned off the power to the unit, saved electricity, and just turned it off remotely. It was very handy. Or if I had to make a statement because the bills weren't being paid, click. It was very handy.
Okay, there you go. All right. So IP controlled power at PDUs, power distribution units. Yes. Send me a link to what you like or two or three, and I'll put them in the show notes. Interestingly, my own tip of the week kind of follows along with yours to some degree. So a lot of us have, you know, various different plug-in devices. You plug one in and you get several outlets out, right? Triple tap, you might call them. This one also has USB power on it. And if you travel internationally, as I do, as I have in the past a lot more, one thing that you realize is that most every device that you carry on the road nowadays, laptop, power supplies, you might have a medical device, a CPAP or something like that. You have chargers, all kinds of USB chargers that you might have to plug in. And almost all of those are completely auto ranging, right? They work on a PDM power supply. And so you can, plug them into, up to 240, 245, 250 volts or 110, 120 volts. Doesn't matter. They work. However, so many of these devices have surge protection in them. And surge protection is not designed to be typically, work at different voltages. This one, maximum level, 125 volts. So if you take this to Europe and you use an adapter to plug it in and, you have your other devices all plugged in here because it's U.S. standard, you don't have, you don't need to bring a whole bunch of, Europe to U.S. plugs. Bring a U.S. power strip, plug your auto ranging devices into it. But when you plug this in, if this has surge protection in it, you're going to let the magic smoke out. And then that, I think at a hotel in Istanbul is where the magic smoke came out of this particular device. Oddly enough, it still works. It still delivers power to the sockets, but the protection, the protected light no longer comes on up here. So it's, and I don't know if the USBs work. I don't usually use them. So anyway, so I've even been at trade shows where I've said, look, guys, all we have are surge protected power strips, and we've got some devices to plug in, and they're auto ranging, but I'm going to have to let the magic smoke out of this power strip, for this to work. And everybody closes their eyes and we turn it, plug it in and poof, okay, it'll work now. It's just not protected. So that's your tip. You can get unprotected, power strips, and that's the thing to take with you, if you got to travel, if you do like I do and plug, various devices in that are auto ranging. So that's my tip of the week. Don't take 110 volt only surge protected power strips to other countries because you're going to let the smoke out. All right. Henry, have you got a tip for us?
A bit of a tip, but it's a lot about what we've been talking about today. So for those of you who are interested in finding out a bit more about AOIP and the SMPTE 2110 and how it all sort of knits together and what you need in terms of need to start thinking about in terms of implementing IP in your environment, I've got a couple of recommendations. One is to download a book which is available on the broadcastbridge.com website, mm-hmm. called Preparing for Broadcast IP Infrastructures. And that's quite an interesting document. It does cover some of the video side of what we do, but it's all relevant. It's all applicable for the AES-67, and the audio side is very valuable for the radio side. So that's a good source of information and a good reference point. I think it's under what they call their essential guide. You do have to sign up to their website to download it, but it's very good. And awesome. The other one is a bit of a plug. We also at calrec.com, we have what we call a network primer, which you can download, which again gives you a little bit of a historic view on networking, but also tries to bring you up to date with AES-67 and what you need to start thinking about if you're interested in IP infrastructure.
Good. I've got them both, and I'll put them in the show notes. I'll get the links to those, and I'll put them in the show notes so people can just click on the link. And you can easily find those show notes at two different places on the web. You can find them at thisweekinradiotech.com. That's our home website. But the show notes are also on our program producer's website, and that's gfqnetwork.com. gfqnetwork.com. You'll find our shows as well as lots of other shows of interest at gfqnetwork.com. And the show notes exist there as well. Henry, good tip. I like having learning educational resources, especially if they're easy to read. So that's good. Hey, we got to go. We've almost taken up all our time here. Henry, thank you so much for joining us from the UK so late at night. I appreciate you staying up late and hope you get a good night's sleep tonight.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much for having me. And yes, I shall sleep and dream of what we've done this evening.
All right. Chris Tobin, you've still got an evening ahead of you before you lay your head down. Thanks for being with us, buddy.
Yes, I do. We're actually, we've been doing Jazz Appreciation Month. So we've got Juilliard was in there earlier this afternoon. We have the Queen's College of Music coming in this evening and live broadcast one after another of the next 2 weeks. So yeah, it's going to be a busy, busy time.
You often remind me that radio is a bucket with a hole in the bottom of it. You just keep filling it up.
More. We got a lot of saxophone and clarinets and drums going through that hole right now.
Ah, okay. So there's musicians in the building right now, huh?
Musicians have arrived. They're setting up in the performance space. They're tuning up, and we'll have a live broadcast in approximately 1 hour, 7 p.m. Eastern, and it'll be fun. An hour of music, live
music. Will that be streamed online as well?
Yes, wbgo.org.
All right. You can check it out then. All right. Hey, we got to go. Thanks a lot to Suncast, our producer for this week in Radio Tech. He does an awesome job. Really appreciate him. And thanks to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, where you'll find not only this podcast, but plenty of others too, including What the Tech and wrestling podcasts and just all kinds of things. So check all that out at gfqnetwork.com. Remember, our website is thisweekinradiotech.com. And if you would, if you enjoy our podcast, hey, Chris and I met so many people at NAB who told us they listen to our podcast. They love it. They download it. They listen to it while they're driving, while they're stuck in traffic, while they're beating on the steering wheel because somebody did something dumb in front of them. And we appreciate all of you listening and watching to the podcast. Tell a friend, if you would, let them know. And of course, if you see us on social media, please like and share. That would be just awesome. We also, you know, all the episodes are on YouTube. So if you just go to YouTube and look for This Week in Radio Tech, you'll find our channel. It's managed by our friends at the GFQ Network, but it's called This Week in Radio Tech. You can subscribe to that channel and hit the little bell for notification. You'll be notified when a new episode is posted, usually a day or so after we do the show live. So thanks a lot. Gotta go. You guys have a great day. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.